You are now tuned in to the realest podcast.
We back up yes, in this thing. Sir. You can't roll with us if your last name don't got no loyalty. Podcast party popping, but you already knew. I've been rolling with these folks. This that Monday night crew.
Millennials versus the world like. Millennials versus the world like you. Millennials versus the world like. Millennials versus the world like you. Millennials versus the world. Millennials versus the world like you. Millennials versus the world like. Millennials versus the world like you.
Yo, what up, good people, man? Welcome back to another episode of Millennials vs. the World. It's your boy, K-Dot Mims, the only spot you get authenticity and entertainment at the same time. So today, man, the authenticity and entertainment is coming from a dope individual, a fellow Aggie. You know how we coming out with Aggie Pride, man. So she's doing a lot of great things in the area, man, a true grinder, a true entrepreneur, and really just a dope person, man. Miss Shannon Nichelle, how you doing, man? What's happening?
I'm doing great. That was an amazing intro.
appreciate it.
Thank you. So
I always start with kind of like how was life? Because life can life sometimes, and you had a recent birthday, so happy birthday.
Thank you.
So just how is it? How is it adulting and the pandemic's over now? We back to regular life. How has all that been before we get into what today is about?
It's been amazing. Mm-hmm. It's also been challenging.
For sure.
In the best ways, I think, right now, especially with me turning 30, it's kind of just happening all at the same time.
Okay.
Life has pretty much just been putting me in position to challenge myself to be more disciplined, to
For sure.
stay focused, and to really, mm-hmm. like, narrow down exactly what my goals are and what my purpose is. So, like, that's how it is for me. So, I'm going to say right now my focus is about balance.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like, balance and just being intentional with who I interact with, who I talk to on a daily, and also, like, just who I work with, who I network with.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
for
so sure. That's life. Life has just been teaching me lessons like that.
Yeah. So I'm going to ask this question. Self-inflicted lessons or unintentional lessons?
Both. I think both. I think lessons about myself, right? Like, my strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah.
And then an example of that would probably be... not putting a million things on my plate at once.
For sure.
Not believing I'm superwoman, but not actively trying to be superwoman.
Yeah. Nah, that's a real thing, though.
And a lot of times I will have things that I want to accomplish in a time span and set it on my table, but I'm learning that I have to be better at, like, just, it's okay to, like, space it out. It's okay to have a little patience when it comes to, like, milestones and landmarks. I think for me, I had, like, an extreme sense of urgency, like, I need this by this time, by this date, or by this age. And so what I'm learning in a good way, but also I had to learn it the hard way, is to just go with the flow a little more.
Yeah.
And then also just, if something is, like, really blowing up in my lane, like, focus on that.
Yeah.
Like, stay focused on my niche, and then I don't have to, like, check all these boxes, especially if it's not necessary.
Yeah, for sure. No, dope. So, kind of getting into that, like, let's kind of talk on, like, your upbringing, where you from, and then kind of lead us into how you got to
A&T. Cool. Okay,
yeah, for sure.
So, Aggie Pride.
Aggie Pride all day and all night. You understand me?
I'm from Maryland, Prince George's County, raised, born and raised. Mm-hmm. I went to A&T. Man, because it felt like home. So, like, to bring it back, my dad was born in D.C. He from here, too. And then my mother's from North Carolina.
Okay.
And she moved here for work when she was in her early 20s and been here ever since.
Okay.
So, that's how I came up.
Your only child?
No, I have a younger sister.
Okay.
And my mom went to Auntie. My dad went to Hampton.
Okay.
So, for me, like... the household growing up was always about, like, Black excellence, HBCU pride, for like, sure. understanding your history, your background, and, like, finding a family in that.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, they was both athletes.
Yeah.
My mother was a cheerleader, softball player, and she just loved sports, like, loved watching sports and all that kind of stuff. She could shoot a little bit, too, but she you know, that was her main thing. And then my father played, you know, what's it called, baseball, and his main thing was basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up, like, in that sports world, that mm-hmm. sports household. I played for Oxon Hill Boys and Girls Club okay. all the way up until you was too old to play. So I started off doing soccer at the peewee level all the way up. Mm-hmm. I started doing basketball, same thing. And those was, like, my main two.
Yeah.
Forever.
Yeah.
And then when I got to high school, I started doing track. I mainly did, like, the 400 and the 4x4 relay. And one of my big sisters taught me how to do triple jump, and I fell in love with triple jump. So that's, like, my whole thing. And then it always came back to soccer and basketball after that. But when I got to A&T, I looked at a couple different schools.
Okay.
I was the one, like, trying not to go to my parents' school.
Oh,
so
I
want to just go because you went there. Like, I'm going to look at different schools and everything. And then when I did my campus tours, like, A&T just was it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I toured everywhere, but when I got to A&T, I was just like, yeah, this is it right here. Mm-hmm. This right where I'm supposed to be. And it just felt like home from the jump.
Yeah.
And then athletic wise, they didn't have a soccer team, so that was the only thing. Like,
oh, so you like that in soccer?
Yeah, I really could have played soccer in college. I wanted to play soccer in mm-hmm. college, but I think the two offers that I got, I went to a small private school mm-hmm. in this area, and they're all right. But when it comes to, like, pushing athlete recruitment, that's mm-hmm. not something they, like, really prioritized at the time.
Yeah.
But the counselor that I did have enter me in the portal, it was kind of like towards the end of my high school career, though, like way behind the timeline. But mm-hmm. the two offers I got, I can't even think of the name of the school. It was like a small school in, like, the mountains. Like,
oh, got you.
Big on soccer, though.
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
Like a Pennsylvania or, like, somewhere mm-hmm. where they have, you know, big soccer tournaments stuff like that. And I was like, nah, I need to go to A&T, so
yeah,
I just wasn't able to play soccer. That's the only thing. I ended up playing basketball, though.
Mm-hmm.
Originally, back then, WNBA players wasn't making six figures off rip like they are now. Like, the mm-hmm. marketing dollars wasn't as high. Mm-hmm. So it never really was my goal to play in the league or to make it that way.
Mm-hmm.
I always wanted to be, like, on the business side of it. I wanted to hoop for fun.
Yeah,
and
for
I
sure.
felt like, from what I had observed from college, I felt like it was not fun. It was more like a job.
Yeah.
So I told my father, like, my sophomore, junior year, I was like, I wasn't really looking to pursue playing on mm-hmm. a college level. And then I got there and I was like, I need to hoop.
Yeah.
That's how, like, A&T started for me. That was my start freshman year. Like, first mm-hmm. thing I did after playing on a blacktop with the guys a couple times, like, mm-hmm. first thing I did was, like, going to fitness center. Like, I heard y'all having, like, a travel team. And, you know, can somebody tell me more about that? What's that like?
Mm-hmm.
And I tried out, made a team, and just played all 4 years on the team.
Dope.
Ended up winning 3 national championships with them.
Oh, yeah.
It was cool, though, because I want to say, if I'm not mistaken, A&T was, like, one of the first HBCUs to have a women's team in that travel league.
For sure.
So for us, that was big because that was my freshman year when we won the championship for the first time. I looked a little rough in that picture, but that was an honor to, like, have, like, while I'm in school still, a lot of them had graduated, like, still, like, I'm still there. And I got this big picture of me and the team. Like,
for sure.
We are shown love. And for then they showed love like that throughout the whole campus. Like, of course, you got your MEAC team. And mm-hmm. they was real good at the time.
Yeah.
They showed love, and then they also showed love and respect to us, to the travel team. So it was, like, a great college experience for that.
So did you know then when you – so first, salute. And another thing I'll say is, like, I had a homeboy that did the travel team. I think a lot of people don't understand that experience is very similar to the collegiate basketball.
It's the work ethic that come with it. Like,
for sure.
I guess it's not promoted as much,
mm-hmm.
but, man, like, any competitive athlete can appreciate playing at a higher level past high school.
Facts.
Like, you're going against talent that either played D1 and transferred, mm-hmm. didn't make the team, but have that talent
mm-hmm.
for whatever political reasons, or somebody like me who didn't even pursue recruitment in the NCAA for her own reasons.
Yeah.
But still wanted to hoop. So, like, it was some dogs.
Oh, yeah.
It was some dogs on my team, and it was some dogs that we would play against sometimes. But we was cooking. Like, we had a really good run.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So, did you know then, like, and we're going to get into to what you do now in that world, mm-hmm. but, like, did you know then the route would have been not playing professionally and trying to do something in the professional world, mm-hmm. not being an athlete? So as you going through that journey, so do you already knew then to try to set up what you was going to do later, or did kind of
I think it's two parts.
Yeah.
Because at this point, right, soccer was out the picture.
Yeah.
So I had kind of just let my soccer dreams go.
Okay. Because
I used to want to, like, try out for the team here, like DC team and all of that. And then, mm-hmm. you know, I just was like, the love grew for basketball more once I didn't have soccer anymore. So I kind of, they were even at first. And then the more and more I competed and got to experience a higher level of discipline and having two-a-days and weight room and all that stuff, like getting that college experience, traveling to these different tournaments and seeing these different schools and facilities, it just grew more. Like, my passion and love for the game grew more. I thought about, pursuing, like, overseas as an option, because that would have been an option.
Yeah.
But while I was in school, I started to just gear more towards the business side.
For sure.
Like, while I still had that passion for basketball and I love being a hooper, I love being an athlete, I still had to, like, really pay attention to the dream that I had, which was to be on the business side. And it was more specifically, like, to be in a WNBA front office.
Yeah.
Or, you know, something along the lines of executive leadership, get into that space, like, as the end goal. And it started with different things. Like, the original purpose was just helping athletes. I want to help athletes, whether it's help them build their personal brand, build their business with strategy and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Or more like a more sensitive one is, like, just help them, like, with their career.
Yeah,
whether
for
it's money management, whether it's advice, or simply just, like, helping them move the right way and protecting them. And that became more of a goal, like, as I got older in it.
Yeah.
Like, maybe, like, after my sophomore year in college, I was kind of like, yeah, I'm going to keep hooping because I love hooping, but
yeah,
I know I don't want to hoop for a living.
Yeah.
I want to hoop, like, just because I can, not really to make money off of it.
Where your business sense come from? Were your parents in, like, were they in the business space? Or where does that mindset of, like, I want to be on the business side of things? Or was it just, like, how your mind went after you were done with hoops?
I've always been a business type person.
Selling candy out the locker.
No, not really. Like, I'm a horrible salesperson, but
I got you.
I've always been into that type of world. Mm-hmm. I think it starts with, like, math.
Yeah, for
sure. And then for me, loving math went to me learning about money.
Yeah.
And then from there, it just grew and grew.
Yeah.
I would say watching how my parents move, how my mom handles business, how my dad moves in the sports industry as a coach and stuff like that, all kind of came together.
For sure.
I think I'm like a beautiful blend of both of them, but I got my own sauce on it as well.
For sure.
You know, to add to it. But it definitely came from, like, just a foundation of having structure.
Yeah.
And then also, like, I was, I want to say about 12, I hope that's right. 12-ish.
Yeah,
12-ish.
Yeah.
I was young. Between 10 and 12.
Yeah.
And one of my mom's friends, co-workers, sister, was the GM for the LA Sparks, and she's from DC.
Yeah.
So Penny Toler is a legend in my eyes.
For sure.
And
salute.
Man, I think we had got tickets or something to the game, and I got to meet her. But, like, just seeing her be a GM at, like, 12, I said, I'm trying to do that.
Yeah,
like,
that's dope.
Me. That's all me. That feels so authentically me. It was easy to be like, even in high school, like, I had some friends who would always say, like, you're going to be somebody's boss, or you're going to be, like, a businesswoman, I can tell. Because I always used to wear suits. I always used to wear blazers and all that. I still love a good blazer.
For sure, like, for sure. Yeah,
that used to always be me. So it kind of was already in me before I, like, manifested it. And I think in college, I was allowed to explore and do more because I didn't even volunteer for this, but I got tapped my sophomore year by the current president of Society for Advancement and Management.
Okay.
I was the chair of community service. I was like the miss. You know, on NC campus, you got miss for every organization.
Yeah.
He was graduating, and he just was like, yeah, I'm going to make you the president. I think you should be the president next. And I was like, for real?
Yeah. So was it scary when you heard that, when he first said it to you like
it
that?
It was kind of like, whatever you see.
Yeah.
I'm going to just roll with it because I was okay just doing the community service, but it gave me a crazy opportunity to be a president on campus to get practice with things I do now on a larger scale.
Yeah, yeah.
Recruiting membership,
yeah.
Increasing membership for the organization, hosting programs, planning programs, putting together presentations, like all of that started at T. So with me, Swag Sports is like an extension and an elevated version of stuff that I started like getting comfortable doing and learning how to do at T.
Yeah.
Whether it's speaking in front of people, presenting,
yeah.
or literally just being able to articulate and like advocate for myself. Being on the council in the School of Business, being on the Student Leadership Council.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you was getting it.
And like stuff like that.
Yeah.
So you got to think about it. Like I was hooping. I had a funny lesson during that time as well when I was hooping. Mm-hmm. I was made a captain after my freshman year.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was stripped of captain during my sophomore year.
Mm-hmm.
But
you ain't share why?
I can kind of with a little
filter. Go ahead.
It wasn't nothing like super bad.
I get you. It was just a lesson.
My time was split once again, just like.
Mm-hmm.
The lesson I brought up earlier.
Yeah.
My time was split between running SAM, my accounting degree.
Yeah.
Being a part of a couple of different, you know, organizations working on campus.
Yeah.
And hooping. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't able to put 100% of my time into being a captain.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had that honor before, like in high school, soccer, basketball.
Mm-hmm.
I've had that honor before, so I know what it takes to be a captain and a leader.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it was a respect thing. Like, I appreciated my coach for that because it reminded me, like, you putting too much on your plate. Like,
yeah,
you gotta.
For sure.
That's always something that comes back to me every time. So, like, at that time, it was cool. I was like, I understand, because I had a job. I had this and that going on.
Yeah.
So I took it as a lesson, but it was more so like, well, I know I'm a leader.
Yeah.
So while the title was taken at that time, I still was a leader. So it's just a perfect example of just how everything I experienced and got to experience during those 4 years, like, laid such a great foundation for me as a leader now and as a CEO, but also as like a coach
for sure,
and all the other things I do. It's like now I can pull from different experiences and stuff, and it makes me even better.
And I think another thing before we get into Swag Sports that a lot of people don't understand, that you just spoke on, like having a title and being a leader is two different things.
Mm-hmm.
Like the title don't make you a leader, you know what I'm saying? Like, and I think a lot of people, there's a lot of captains that's not, like, I hate to use Dion, but I'm going to use Dion. Like, you know the whole, like, dog and leader junk?
Yeah.
Is it true? Is it true? Like, you could be a dog but be nowhere near a leader.
A dog, great player,
yeah.
but don't have it in you to be a leader. And that's what makes the difference. Like, I'm kind of, not to go left, but quick note, I play competitive flag football now, right? I'm a year in, and I've seen it. It's a role that comes with being a captain. It's
for
not
sure.
just the title, but a lot of people appreciate the title more than the responsibility it come with.
Mm-hmm.
And that's cool. You know, everybody not meant to be in that space,
for sure.
in that lane. So that's why I say, like, I don't really trip off of it anymore. Like, after that happened in college, like, I no longer was pressed to have that, oh, I need to be the captain. I need to be the
That's what's up. Yeah.
It's a great honor. Don't get me wrong, but I already know I'm a leader.
Yeah.
So it don't matter what team I go to, what room I step in, whether it's work, corporate, sports.
Yeah.
I'm going to come off as a leader because that's just who I naturally am.
For sure. Dope. So Swag Sports. We're going to get into it. Yeah, I said. Yeah. So, like, kind of get into, like, we're going to get into, like, what you all actually do, but, like, the name, when you knew you was going to do it, how you launched it. Like, I want to hear that, and then we'll get into what Swag Sports.
How did Swag Sports start?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I'm going to say Swag Sports started because of divine intervention.
Okay, salute.
But I'm also say it was first a bunch of other things before I made it Swag Sports.
Okay.
So when I graduated from college, I was gone. I wasn't here for a minute. I was working in like Kansas.
Okay.
Kansas City area. Came back home.
Mm-hmm.
I came back home with two goals in mind: to build my consulting career in the corporate space and to build my basketball career in the business space.
For sure.
And first step I took was a nonprofit called Hoops and High Heels. Hoops and High Heels was focused on mentoring young girls in sports and trying to help build that platform. Because at the time, like now, it's getting kind of lit now. But there was still a lot that the media didn't cover and a lot that wasn't pushed to encourage girls to play sports and keep them in sports. So that was my focus. And I was already coaching soccer. I was helping my dad coach soccer and basketball at the time when I came back home. So it just fit.
Yeah, for sure.
And that was great. There's some scholarships, some textbook scholarships for like one or two kids at the time, like prior to COVID happening. We were able to do that every year for at least one or two girls. And I was able to be a mentor to some high school girls, and that was great.
Yeah.
And then from Hoops and High Heels, I kept that going, like the giving back to the community. It was really big on just community service, really big on that, really big on coaching and athlete development.
For sure.
And then a year later, I saw an opportunity that the ABA was bringing the Women's League back. So the ABA has been around for a long time.
Yeah, for sure.
Once they traded all their teams to the NBA and they kind of restarted, like they've been rolling.
Yeah.
The WABA had folded once or twice.
Mm-hmm.
So they was bringing the WABA back.
Yeah.
Here's where my goals of Penny Toller flashbacks.
Yeah.
Like, okay, this is my opportunity to step into a space that's not really many people are stepping in right now, but it's also the only way to get my foot in the door, because I didn't get those sports internships. I didn't get those like opportunities for whatever reason. You know, companies had their reasons.
Yeah.
But I took that as an opportunity to open a door for myself.
Yeah. Dope,
so
dope.
I looked into everything that year. I originally was going to start it in Charlotte and name the Queen City Charm.
Oh, that's lit. I like that.
And I decided not to move to Charlotte and to stay home.
Okay.
And then I came up with the name Maryland Jewels. Me and my best friend came up with that name while we was in Charlotte. Came back home, put in my application, worked with the commissioner on, you know, all the fees and stuff, founded my own semi-pro women's basketball team.
Yeah, salute, salute.
Yes, thank you. That was under Jewels Nation.
Mm-hmm.
And those two things were already floating.
Yeah.
But I was still trying to figure out, okay, I got that in motion. That's my community. That's my give back. Now, how can I get into the pro space?
Yeah.
How can I work my way into the pro space and start helping some of these athletes play at the next level?
For sure.
The ones that really got it in them, the ones that really want that.
Yeah.
Like, so I got my agent license for the state of Maryland first. And probably like a year after I started the semi-pro team, it was finally like approved and everything.
Yeah.
And then I kept it going. I was like, okay, bet. I kept moving with that, working with my players, trying to help my players get more exposure, get more seen. Some of them were able to leverage that game film to help them go overseas and stuff. So that was a beautiful thing.
For sure.
To me, because I'm like, okay, I'm still able to connect the grassroots and the fresh out of college and the pro connect to get them there. So I love that. And that's how I was. It was the trifecta.
Yeah.
Those things. Hoops and High Heels for the youth. And then Maryland Jewels for the young adults. And then at the time I was like 22. So I was kind of
You was young.
Yeah. So I was like
that's what's up.
Running a team with full of like people that I either hooped with growing up Or they might be like a year or two maybe younger than me. Not too much younger than me.
Yeah, for sure.
So I very much look like a player out there, you know, having to distinguish myself when I'm talking to these other team owners and stuff like that. So that was a part of the challenges of being young and being a woman breaking into the space.
Yeah.
There was a lot of challenges with that. But we here. And then it was Shannon and Shell Sports Management.
Mm-hmm.
Once I got my WNBA certification, I coupled that with the Maryland one and then created Shannon and Shell Sports Management.
So when you were building, like when you go back from the mentorship program and then you started the Maryland Jewels, you didn't know it was going to all come together in that? Or as you started one, you saw the next door? You started this, you saw the next door? Or it kind of like, you know what, it hit me. Oh, I can bring all this into that.
Yeah, it was a combination of insight. And then I feel like God gave me a little bit of the vision too.
Yeah.
And he kind of gave me pieces of it as I went along. Like, I can't say from the time I started Hoops and High Heels, I knew that's where it was going to go. Yeah. But as I was moving through, I was getting bits and pieces of insight and confirmation. Like, yep, this the direction, this the direction. Like, my senior year of college, I built, like, this blueprint. And I had an idea of, like,
I don't know how you was that focused.
Look, I had a I had an idea of, like, different things I wanted to do, right? And I had, like, 4 points on it. Like, all related to sports. But it was, like, Asian. It was, like, youth and community. I want to coach. And then it was like representation. And then the other thing was like a facility. I still haven't got that one yet. But it was like those goals were already there. So I had the vision.
For sure.
Just didn't know the path. I feel like sometimes you either get the steps to take and you don't know where it's going to end, or you get like the full, this is where I'm going to end up vision, but you don't know how you're going to get there.
For sure.
So I was one of those people who had the end goal and just wasn't sure how I was going to get there.
For sure. Yeah. Can you kind of talk about, like, we know you're in the space. We know, like, the big disparities, like the ones every NBA player talks about, right?
Like
money and stuff like that. But what are kind of the challenges for women in general just being in a, like, when I say male dominated, I'm not saying, like, women aren't as good as men, but I'm just saying, like,
male the industry is male dominated.
You know what I'm saying? So, like, what's some of the challenges that people don't really see that you deal with breaking into the space, trying to create more media coverage and trying to develop more players? What are some of the things that we may not know about that you experience when you're trying to build and do things?
Ooh. Let me see. Hold on.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I ain't going to hold you long with that.
Hey, look. But I mean, you know what I'm here
listen,
for. You.
So, so a lot of the conversation is always around pay.
Yeah.
That's the last step to me.
Yeah.
Like, it really starts at support at the grassroots level all
for
the
sure.
way up. Like, I'm blessed to be in the DMV where we a hoop area. So, like, we get support. We get, you know, all the love and the hooping. But I've been in so many places and just understood that it's not as supported. And it starts with, like, looking at how many people is throwing money into women's programs at the grassroots level. How many people is looking into women's development at that level. That's where the disparity starts to me.
Yeah, for sure.
You can look at high schools and be like, wow, they don't have a women's program.
Yeah.
They men's program traveling everywhere. They lit. They in tournaments. They getting sponsored uniforms and or sneakers, stuff like that. That's not always the case. Like, my high school team, we was blessed to have, like, sneakers and stuff every year. But that's not always the case. When you leave this area, you start to see more how much of a fight it is to have that you know, have that equality for women and men.
For sure.
And then, like, when you get out of the younger age, then it's just in general, like, support-wise.
Yeah.
Are the fans coming? Are they packing out the women's like they packing out the men's? Like, that storyline's now. Now it's like, oh, they sold out.
Yeah.
And everybody's, like, happy about that, which is great. But it's the reason we are so proud and celebrating all these things because when we was coming up, that wasn't always the case.
For sure.
So when people are like, oh, they sold out some, okay, it's like, that's not a big deal. Like, the NBA does that all the time. Like, so what, the WNBA team sold out? It's like, nah, it matters because it's plenty of games or it's plenty of teams. I bet women could tell you right now, they girls' team might have been dogs, like, way better than they men's team. But they men's team packed out every night.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and the women's team is, like, maybe half full or something like that. So that's one of the disparities. And outside of that, I think it's the politics of the business. a lot of times I think it's like a subconscious bias that people have when they see you're a woman coming into the space as a team owner, for example, or even as a CEO.
Yeah.
Like, it was very hard to just build certain relationships and have trust.
Yeah.
Because of the fact that it was so many questions. How do you do that? How did she do that? How did she pull this? Mm-hmm. How did she make this happen? But it wasn't like a I support you thing. It was kind of like I'm trying to figure out how she did that before me, or I'm trying to figure out.
Crazy.
You know? So, like, it wasn't a lot of it, but I know it exists.
For sure.
So me being exposed to that, I'm like, wow, I'm glad I got some real ones in my corner that are men, you know, that can advocate for me. But then you have to always be mindful. It's not like that everywhere. Yeah. And it can be down to, like, just trying to get gym space.
Yeah.
You competing with all men.
Sheesh.
Competing with men's teams. They got AAU teams and stuff. Mm-hmm. They need the space. Say they might know the person that run the facility. Mm-hmm. So they get first dibs on their space. He might not call you back. That's just an example, but
it's like every part of it. It's a challenge in every part of it.
Every missing piece of navigating it is crazy. When you're an athlete, like, yes, there's parts of it as a player that you see more, and that comes down more to pay, more to quality of uniforms, quality of facilities that you get. But imagine the people behind the scenes working, trying to get that for you.
Yeah,
that's what I have to experience.
Yeah, for sure.
That part, like, I see the disparities from an athlete's perspective as a former player and a hooper, but then I also see the politics and the business that goes on behind the scenes that you have to work through to build some of that up, to make some of that happen. So, you know, that's all it be.
Yeah. So, and you just tapped into about, like, grassroots. Can you talk about the importance from a developmental standpoint and, like, kind of, I want to say developmental and, like, mindset? Because, like, and do you consider middle school sports a part of that path of grassroots for development?
Yeah. I think, this might be a bold statement, but I think.
Say it. You know
the coaches. Is not coaching like they used to.
Oh, got you. I agree.
I think it's a lot of importance and emphasis on grassroots right now because of how much money AAU makes.
Yeah.
And how popular their social media accounts are, and the highlight clips are bomb. It's a lot of those athletes that got the best highlight clips on Instagram. Go see them play live. Mm-hmm. You're very disappointed. You're like, whoa.
Yeah.
This isn't what I thought I was getting.
For sure.
So, like, sometimes media plays a part in that mindset for them because they're so young. But I would say, to me, I think as coaches, we have to be a little more responsible for that mindset. We got to make sure we're telling people where their kids are talent-wise and being honest. Yeah. And then we also got to make sure that the parents – are on board with us. We got to be in sync. It's a combination of the two, because I get it, coaches can't coach like they used to in the terms of being super Coach Carter like.
You know what I'm saying?
But I can't be afraid to give you feedback on your game or confront, you know, if your parent confront me about your playing time, I got to be able to articulate their skill set, like, they're just not there yet, or this is what we want to work on, so that it's understood. You can't walk on eggshells and stuff like that, because then now you have a whole bunch of entitled young athletes who get to a higher level and their confidence is now very weak because somebody told them the truth and they haven't heard that yet.
Yeah.
So they was unprepared for it. And
for
to me, that's where we got to strengthen their mentality of you can always get better. It's hard work. It's work ethic. You're very talented. You're very athletic. Now let me teach you how to be a hooper.
Yeah, for sure.
Let me teach you how to be a teammate. Let me teach you how to be all these things that come with being a elite level basketball player.
Yeah.
And so, like, I've met some great kids. Like, one kid I want to work with this summer, he has that mentality. Like, I want to get better. I want to be better. But that's not always the case.
Yeah.
So if we can continue to, like, just motivate them to be accountable, but also take it seriously. Like, if you really want to do it and you want to be great at it, even if you don't want to play at the pro level, you just want to give your all to it while you are playing.
Yeah.
That's what makes the best athletes and the best teaching moments.
For sure.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. This is kind of a sidebar, but I want to ask an honest opinion. Do you feel like you can't coach like that no more, but it's still needed? Or do you feel like you just can't coach like that because of the current climate of athletes? let me put myself out there first.
When you
right?
say climate of athletes, what do we mean?
I like the entitlement part, right?
Yes.
So like I mm-hmm. give an example,
or
right?
Or some of them just like talking back, like that kind of thing.
Yeah, but this is the thing, like. Players talk back. When I hooped in high school, but my thing is,
I feel like that's normal banter.
But you gotta have a certain level of stats to be talking back though.
True.
Everybody 1 through 15 can't be talking. You understand what I'm saying? Like you can't be number 8 and like yes. you might get in if we up 30. You can't be talking trash to me. You know what I'm saying? Because I coached in high school for 6 years. You know what I mean?
And so like you understand like the coach. Now I will say like for me,
yeah,
I think when I first got into coaching, mm-hmm. going, you gotta turning that player off mm-hmm. to coach mindset was rough that first sure. year. I was hard on them. Yeah. Like, yeah. I can't believe y'all worried about running a mile? This yeah. ain't nothing. Like, y'all don't want to run this practice. Like, what we doing?
Yeah.
So, like, I would, you know, my father would have to be like, I shouldn't calm down. You know what I'm saying? But I would have those moments where I would be, like, just super passionate about the mm-hmm. game and be like, why are y'all so nonchalant? Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of it comes from, I've learned a lot of athletes, they play to just have fun, to hang out with their friends and stuff. Yeah. But it's not the same. Like, I had fun and hung out with my friends, too.
Yeah.
But it's more of a, I want to win a championship. Like, I'm trying to work. I'm trying to be better. Like, we was in the gym all the time.
Yeah.
Whereas I think with us, we had to be. We was outside. We had stuff to do. Social media just got real, real bad over time.
For sure.
And, like, it's great for, like, businesses, but when it comes to, like, getting distracted mm-hmm. or, like, just wanting to do other stuff.
Yeah.
Now kids got so much to do, it's like they don't want to be in the gym all the time. Yeah, whereas we was in the gym every chance we can get an open run, every chance we can go up and run and shoot.
Yeah.
Like, we was trying to get work in, we was trying to get better, we was just playing because we loved it.
Yeah.
So I think, like, that also kind of makes a difference. But to mm-hmm. answer your question specifically, like, coaching-wise,
like,
I would
say
it's still needed.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I feel like it's still needed. Respectfully,
mm-hmm.
like you can filter out some of the old school
agreed.
Style
absolutely
talking
agree.
And still give them a good hard-earned mm-hmm. check. Like
yeah.
some players need that check to mm-hmm. be better.
Yeah.
It's a lot of players that are good right now that are committed to college right now. And if they just get like a little bit more dog in them, they could probably go to the next level
after that. Yeah, for sure.
Because it's still 2%, 1%.
Yeah.
That's making it past college. But even to get to college is an accomplishment and achievement that you want to see kids make, especially full scholarships, partial scholarships, stuff
for
like
sure.
that.
And I think one of the things is I feel a strong way about just being a part of it on both ends. Like, mm-hmm. I think the other side is, like, if you take it back a little bit, we didn't have all these different programs. So, like, if the coach would talk to you one way, you still had to go back to high school because that's where you got.
That's true. You couldn't just leave and go to a new team.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, it's kind of like, even if you didn't like it or not, you gotta be more sensitive from a coaching standpoint because you could lose players like that.
Yeah.
They could say, like, oh, no, I'm not doing high school. I'm just doing this. And I think.
They move now.
Oh,
it's nothing.
Quick.
They might not even play high school. They might just play AAU.
Yeah, and still may get a scholarship. Like, mm-hmm. not even ever doing that. So, I guess my thing is like, I just hope that high school basketball, even though it's happening now, for boys and girls, doesn't completely fizzle
vanish.
Out. To, you know what I'm saying? To the point where it's not even a focal point of recruitment because
yeah,
it's like
also competitiveness.
Yeah, for sure.
The level of competition.
Speak on that.
Is shaky.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we got a lot of good individual players
mm-hmm.
that's coming out of grassroots, you mm-hmm. know, making it to the next level in college. But as a whole, like if we just look at one high school conference, one high school league, like mm-hmm. you gotta go to some of these games live though. That's what I'd be missing, like mm-hmm. going to the games live to really mm-hmm. get a feel for the intensity. But a lot of the talent is to me right in this sustainable space
mm-hmm.
where it's like y'all are good, y'all might even be great,
mm-hmm.
but we're not on this other side of like extremely competitive and athletic and intense. It's the ones that stand out to me are they super focused, locked in dogs mm-hmm. that stand out to the world. Like
for sure.
Those are those high school athletes that make it to the other side. But the bulk of the high school space in sports, I feel like, has like declined. The level of competition has declined because mm-hmm. a lot of players who are that good are only playing AAU. They're traveling all year. And some kids do play both. They do their mm-hmm. school and they do AAU, mm-hmm. but It just depends. Like, I guess it's up to the parents, and then it depends on them, what they want to do, how they feel about the coach.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's more of a risk. You can lose players like that for sure.
For sure.
Like coaching high school. I still believe in coaching high school over AAU to keep it going, but I see that that's a big trend. AAU's becoming a big thing. It's already been a big thing, but to me, they're getting more and more endorsement dollars. They're getting more and more sponsorship dollars. More and more NBA players and WNBA players are starting their own AAU teams.
Yeah.
Eventually, it will get to the point where you don't even have to play for your high school. You can just
go to this AAU team. That's so to kind of transition from that conversation to something in the same field. We talked about grassroots. We talked about you know, swag sports and what how you see the
Yes, how it all came together.
Yeah, yeah. So I want to kind of ask and get your opinion on, like, being in the DMV, like being in a competitive space city-wise where, you know, there's other people that may have similar ideas. Has that been a bonus point or like a challenge when you're building what you're building, being that we're in such a competitive city? There are a lot of hoopers. Or does that help you because you can kind of get a better pick of the litter, for lack of a better term?
Yeah, I get what you're saying. You're talking about recruiting-wise?
Like recruiting-wise, sports-wise, like having this type of access. Because, like, sports teams, professional sports teams, even though it may look different, the sports, the pro level of sports, we have access to it being here because it's right here, which means the businesses may be grounded here and, like, making those connections and networking being here. So being in that space and being in a competitive, vibrant city, how has that been in your sports world, in swag sports?
I think it fuels me.
Oh, that's what's up.
It fuels me because
that competition don't never leave, do it.
Yeah, because, like, I don't know what it is, but every woman that I have met that I either hoop with or that came before me from the DMV basketball scene, we was bred to be like dogs in a most like shark like sense. Some of us are more loud with it, some of us are more finesse with it, and some of us are more silent hoopers. Like, but all of us have that in us, like for that competitive drive and like leadership. Like, I'm not gonna duck no smoke.
Yeah, for sure.
So when it comes to that, like, you don't even see that as a competition. I see it as like grounds for work, and I'm always a collaborative person.
For sure.
So I'm down to work with people. I'm down to help other people and have a mutually beneficial relationship.
For sure.
I think that part I love. The part I don't care for is it creates a lot of shiesty individuals.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's so competitive, because of all the access, people feel like they have to move a certain way to get what they need.
Yeah.
And I'm taking the scenic route. Like, I'm not taking no shortcuts. I'm staying true to my integrity, true to my authenticity. And I think a lot of times that has slowed up the process of getting where I am now. But I'm glad I did it that way, because you know why? Because I don't got no toxic business relationships. I don't got no negativity hanging over my head. Like, I'm cool. Like, I'm in good, positive business and friend relationships with people that I really rock with, that rock with me. And I was able to weed out stuff that was gonna hold me back. So once I did all that, I was good. But even in the midst of all that, I wasn't backing down from nothing. I was like, nah, this is happening. Like, this is who I am. This is what I'm built to do. And the beautiful thing about it is I know nobody can truly execute something that is a vision that was laid on my heart the way I can.
For sure.
So if I see somebody that might have a similar idea or might be doing something similar to what I may have thought about doing or have done in the past, it doesn't bother me because I'm there to support you. Because I already know it's going to have my own little swag on it. It's going to have my own little sauce on it. So it's not going to be exactly the same.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think everybody can eat. Yeah. And when you have that mentality, you don't feel threatened.
For sure.
And then I'm from here. So it's like, I'm not an outsider. Like, I'm at home. Like, I'm comfortable. You know what I mean?
For sure.
Like, I'm comfortable. I got my people. And then I got people that I've met as I've come up in the industry. I'm feel safe. I feel secure in who I am.
Yeah, for sure.
So it's not going to shake me. It's not going to knock me off my square. Challenges going to come. People going to test you.
Yeah.
Because of who you are, because for of sure. what you look like. And I take that, and sometimes I react with God. Sometimes I react with frustration. Like, at the end of the day, like, we keep it moving. That's what swag sports is, though. I think, like, the beautiful thing about swag sports, like, my logo is the diamond.
Yeah.
You can see it. Like, my sister made this logo, too. My younger sister.
Salute.
She's a graphic designer. Okay. Shout out to Epic Creations.
Get them. Salute.
But, diamonds, you know, represent like kind of my whole journey.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like being able to come out and shine under pressure.
For sure.
You know, being able to make it through the rough times. Like I did not grow up in like a struggle story. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like
for sure.
I grew up in the suburbs of DC. I grew up in PG County. My mm-hmm. parents worked hard. I had all those great opportunities for me.
Mm-hmm.
My struggle didn't come until I had to face the real world.
Yeah.
And I had to go be an entrepreneur and I had to go pursue these dreams and I had to deal with racism in corporate America. I had to deal with, you know, gender bias mm-hmm. and age bias and those things. That's when I started having to build my mental toughness, my mm-hmm. emotional toughness in that way. So I think everything that laid the foundation for me as an Aggie, having yeah. teachers that tell you keep it real, like yeah, which you prep yeah, you need for that. The real world.
For sure.
That's the biggest misconception people think going at HBCU mm-hmm. doesn't prepare you for white people. And I'd be like,
that's not the truth. They ain't nowhere like, remotely close.
It's like, I don't knock anybody college decision, but when I hear somebody say that, I'm like, did you really do your research? Because
mm-hmm.
A&T prepared me to be the CEO that I am right now,
for
the
sure.
senior consultant that I am right now. I wouldn't be her if I didn't go through A&T's
yeah,
program.
Sure.
That growth is who I am.
For sure.
It's coupled with how I was raised, the foundation of like, sometimes it was a lot of pressure, but the foundation of like, wanting to strive to be your best,
mm-hmm.
being disciplined, holding yourself accountable, but giving your all to everything you do as an athlete. That was my thing when yeah. I was younger. So sports, winning, building that competitive mindset, having class, having sportsmanship.
For
and
sure.
then you have my mother's side of the nurturing aspect, mm-hmm. being a leader, being able to communicate.
Yeah.
That's things that I've learned. So then mm-hmm. me being an empath, me having like a spiritual grounding is like, that's where my genuine soul comes from, my genuine spirit comes from, and like me getting better over time
for
at
sure.
communicating, articulating, all those things played a part in who I am. So because I know where I came from and mm-hmm. who made me and what made me and mm-hmm. how I'm built, like I always say, like I'm just built for this.
Yeah, for sure.
Like I'm built for it. Now if you come to the city, you're gonna see a lot of different range of personalities and
for
stuff
sure.
in this sports space, but it's some people like that I rock with and some people like me that we just genuine
mm-hmm.
and we built for it. Even if they not from here, I know some real great people in the area.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. I two things, because you made me think about something else.
I'll take it.
You made me think about something else. So when you say how you are built for this, or you say like
yeah.
you know, you've performed under pressure, you've seen what it's like to be a leader. So when you're doing what you do with Swag Sports, is that the same type of product, no matter what service it is or what person mm-hmm. you're working with, that you base how you work with people? That's what you want them
yeah.
to get from
yeah.
out of your business once they do. So can you kind of tap into like, what exactly yeah. would you want the person that is represented
Clients.
to be like after they've been developed through you or after they've been in
yeah.
work with you?
I think it's two pieces to it. Like,
okay.
So Swag Sports is a compilation of all the things we talked about, right?
Mm-hmm.
I basically made that like the enterprise that encompasses everything else that we do.
Mm-hmm.
And then the biggest piece of that is the agency side.
Yeah.
I think the first year was rough because mm-hmm. now you're stepping into a different swim lane, same industry.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to learn how to be an agent proper, like
mm-hmm.
how to see certain stuff, how
mm-hmm.
to know what's real and what's not.
Mm-hmm.
And that was some tough lessons in the beginning. But once I learned it, mm-hmm. I was like, I only need to know one time and then check myself in the
For
future.
Sure.
It was the same way with clientele.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really have any bad clients per se. I think the difference is knowing what you want Swag to represent. And I wanted
Dope.
Clients that was hungry like I was hungry.
For sure.
Like, all I did was transfer the hunger I had on the court
mm-hmm.
or on the field into the business.
For sure.
So I want them to have that same mentality. Like, I didn't want any quitters on
yeah.
my roster. I didn't want people who thought it was going to happen overnight because
yeah.
that's not realistic.
For sure.
I didn't want to give them unrealistic expectations. I just wanted people that was genuine, people like me.
Yeah, for sure.
We're faith-based, like me and my partner, and the way that I grounded our company.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're not ashamed to give credit to God and where
mm-hmm.
credit is due. So,
Salute,
like,
for sure.
The way that we move is really I go off of if it aligns, it aligns.
Yeah, for sure.
And the second piece of that is, say something did, we did give somebody an opportunity and it just didn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
I let it go.
Yeah.
In peace, because I know that means somebody else is coming.
Yeah.
I know that means like the next better opportunity is on its way. Mm-hmm. And that's really where it comes from. So like, I want hard workers. I want dogs. I want people that's willing to put in the work to make themselves great. And then, you know, I have to meet them where they at too sometimes.
For sure.
and do my part. Mm-hmm. So when they come out of the system, whether they're here for 6 months or a year, I want them to at least say, we had an impact. So that's my biggest thing is impact with Swag Sports.
Yeah.
You know, as a result of this, like something that Swag Sports contributed helped them make an impact, whether it was in their personal life or on the basketball court.
What are, when Swag Sports is as big as we know it will be, what do you want it to be
yes,
the mecca
manifest
of?
That.
You feel me? Yeah. So what do you want it to be the mecca of? Like, when you hear Swag Sports, you want people to think, or you want people to know, you want them to think of what when they hear it?
Okay, I like this. I'm going to say class.
Okay.
Charisma.
Salute.
Integrity.
For sure.
Agility.
Yeah.
Like, being able to make stuff happen out of nothing sometimes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's really it. Like, I want them to think Swag is, like, a space where you can be your true, authentic self, but we also trust the process around here.
For sure.
Like, as a culture, I want it to feel like family, but I also want it to be a space where we want to pull the best out of you.
For sure.
So, yeah, I'm a rock with charm on that, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Charisma, class, respect, integrity.
Mm-hmm.
Those big things.
For
big
sure.
things that I need across the board.
Salute, salute. So tell everybody where they can find you at, all your handles and all the great stuff.
Oh, I'm trying to think. I almost forgot. Okay. So you can find me on Instagram at Swag Sports LLC. If you want to follow the business page, follow our journey with all our athletes.
For sure.
You can also follow my personal business page at Shannon Nichelle. And you can follow us on, is it Twitter?
Mm-hmm.
You can follow me on Twitter at Shan Sports.
For sure, salute. So appreciate you coming through. Appreciate you coming
thank
through.
You,
rap
thank
for sure.
you.
Yeah, all right, man. It's your boy K-Dot Mims, man. The only spot you get authenticity and entertainment at the same time.
Millennials versus the world like. Millennials versus the world like you. Millennials versus the world like. Millennials versus the world like you. Millennials versus the world. Millennials versus the world like you. Millennials versus the world like. Millennials versus the world like you.